So we have Ian McIntyre from the Moreland City Council. He's a resident of the Moreland City Council. And we're going to be talking about the fact that, excuse me, the council had proposed to reduce or cut respite care for residents, vulnerable residents. And last night, there were issues at the council meeting, and the issues brought up, and I think they won the day. But we're not talking about the details of why the council proposed this thing. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. Yeah, g'day. I guess the background is that on the 1st of June, a letter was sent out to various clients who were receiving age and disability home support services from Moreland Council. These sort of services cover things that basically are for seniors and people with disabilities and their carers. And I guess the kind of services vary quite widely. It might be a Moreland Council worker coming in and helping feed someone or shower someone, but it also extends to respite, whereby a worker, you know, comes in and basically looks after an elderly person or a disabled person, and then their carers get some time to recharge or do shopping or spend time with other family members, children and so forth. So it's a very important service, and Moreland provide, like a lot of councils, their workers are unionised and properly trained, and the whole system's quite regulated. So they provide a really quality service. So this letter came out on, people received this letter on the 2nd of June, no warning, no consultation, basically saying starting from now to the end of the year, people's access to these kind of support services would be phased out and would only be available between 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday to Friday. Now, of course, during those hours, workers aren't paid
penalty rates.
Basically, if they're helping people on the weekends or outside those hours, then they receive penalty rates.
Mm.
This letter sort of came, was a real shock to people. On the same day, the workers received something in their pigeonhole saying, we're phasing stuff out. I mean, obviously that was going to affect a number of the workers who have basically chosen to do this kind of work. It's not, you know, the best paid work in the council, but they've chosen to do this work because often it suits their hours. Often they're looking after family or other people, and you know, so working on a weekend or working after hours.
Mm. So was this just a cost cutting measure, Ian?
Look, it's so that's the background on the cut itself. I can talk later on how it was going to negatively affect people. Look, I'm not really sure. Those of us who were campaigning against it, I mean, you know, I can speculate about what it was about. I mean, I guess the context is that come to the National Disability Insurance Scheme, NDIS, is being rolled out around the country. What that will mean, it's already been rolled out in some areas, but for most areas it's yet to come. But when that scheme comes out, essentially the council will lose roughly $6 million in funding. And what will happen is that the people who are eligible for the NDIS will be given a list of providers that they can choose from. So the council is looking at losing, you know, they haven't lost any government funding yet, and there's a similar thing happening on a state level with aged care. So the council's looking at losing funding in the future, and I guess my feeling is this was a response to that by kind of the management who runs this section are kind of I guess whenever you're facing a cut and a change like that, you sort of have a couple of options. You can kind of fight it. You can deal with it in a way where you remain committed to providing quality services, or you can start cutting costs so that you can compete against private providers. But unfortunately, that means a race to the bottom.
Mm.
And certainly, you know, parents' experience and feedback from parents is that private providers, there's some okay ones out there, but generally they're not providing as good a service as council because their workforce is casualised and poorly paid. They don't have the same kind of training. And obviously the focus of a private provider is either making money or, you know, at the very least breaking even. So it's not necessarily that care for clients is the key thing. And, you know, it's very important for elderly and disabled people to have a continuity of care where, you know, they form a relationship with a worker, they see that worker, they know they can trust them. You know, certainly children with autism and other issues, you know, it can be very, you know, upsetting to have a different person turning up every fortnight. And we're also hearing stories back from parents who are campaigning against this cut that their experience with private providers had been that sometimes if their children were severely disabled, the worker would turn up and go too hard and actually leave. So I think that what this was about was about management trying to cut costs, but not necessarily cutting costs because, you know, it wasn't like there's been any reduction in funding immediately. It's all going to happen in 2019. But I think they were figuring perhaps, you know, I could only speculate that by doing this, you know, they could start cutting costs and therefore kind of compete with private providers in the future. So, you know, it's a bit of a difficult situation for council, but I think as we've seen with so many things, the focus really has to be, you know, how do you respond to these cuts in a way that doesn't diminish the service that you're providing?
And the feedback I get is that the council jumped the gun, obviously, without even consulting the service receiving people. They didn't consult the parents or the carers of the population in the council who use the service. They didn't even call a meeting of them, did they?
No. It was essentially, it really felt like an ambush. People just got a letter saying, you know, your service is going, and the only option that was given in the letter was that there would be an individual meeting in which, you know, a council officer would meet with people and sort of say, when do you want, you know, what new hours do you want? But the immediate thing was that, you know, people who are working, you know, 9 to 5 or longer hours, you know, having a service that's after 7 that isn't after 7 p.m. and isn't available on the weekends isn't any use to them. These individual meetings that were called were also, you know, to look at other options for funding and so forth. But as I've outlined, a lot of people felt that service providers other than council just haven't got the quality or the commitment. Beyond that, there's also a lot of parents who don't, and disabled and elderly people who don't have access to other services, so they fall between the cracks of what's out there. And that's why the council service is so important. So, yeah, there hadn't been any consultation. I mean, you know, being cynical about these things, I think the idea was, you know, I suspect, and this is just my feeling, is that it was basically about ambushing people and just going, you know, here's a fait accompli, you've got no choice, you know.
Yeah, and also the council workers are accountable because they are accountable to the council, the elected body, as the council itself. But the other question...
Yeah, look, I mean, the feedback from councillors, there was only one councillor on the council who'd sort of been attuned to this early on, that was Sue Bolton. from Socialist Alliance, and she'd sort of picked up, you know, she'd been sort of consistent in rejecting this. I think the other councillors, what happened with the original decision was that, as so many things are starting to happen, it was kind of moved into a confidential situation where the public didn't get to hear that part of the council meeting. You know, this kind of financial or corporate kind of confidentiality stuff, you know, was used to kind of bury it.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, look, it's hard to say, but certainly feedback from councillors was that they didn't really realise what they were voting for. I mean, you know, they were kind of convinced that, that there were changes were required to deal with, you know, the upcoming NDIS, but that these changes wouldn't really affect anyone. And I guess they either didn't think it through, or they didn't read it, or they didn't realise.
Mm.
And so their feedback was very much, we didn't realise, you know, that this would have this kind of effect. And I think that really points to the importance of sort of that there was a community-based campaign, because without that, this just would have, you know, rolled through. There's no doubt about that.
Mm. A quick question about, did any of the unions come to your aid on this issue?
Yep. The ASU was supportive. Obviously, you know, the council workers had obviously been ambushed as well. They just received a thing saying, you know, by the end of the year, you won't be able to work these hours anymore. You'll essentially be losing your penalty rates. And, you know, that meant that potentially, you know, people were going to be facing losing work because not all of them can work, you know, the hours that the council was proposing. So, yes, the union was definitely supportive. I mean, essentially what we did was a couple of carers who were affected got onto Sue Boltman, and then with Sue we started sending letters to the council, and we had couple of meetings with the acting mayor and the directors, and we sort of kept that pressure up. We launched a petition. We got some story in the local paper, and then out of that, what was really great was some other parents started getting involved.
Mm.
And immediately, kind of council management, look, I won't go into all the details, but they certainly tried to muddy the waters and kind of convince councillors that, you know, this really wasn't going to affect anybody, and that anybody who was too badly affected would be looked after. Mm. And, but pretty quickly, because enough parents basically sent through their stories and explained how, as migrants, as workers, and as people who are looking after children, looking after elderly parents with issues that are 24/7, 7 days a week. I mean, you know, people with disabilities, people with ageing, with issues related to ageing, it's not as if their issues only happen between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Monday
That's right.
Friday.
That's right.
So that message came through pretty clearly to councillors. I think also the fact that it's an election year for council and so forth.
Always works, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think there was sort of two levels. I think they realised, a lot of them, you know, on a compassionate level realised, oh, gosh, you know, this really is going to have an effect. You know, it's not just about number crunching and budget shifting. I think the other thing that was really crucial was that we had a councillor, we had somebody on the council who was, you know, as sympathetic as Sue was, and who was willing to put up a motion to turn this back, because, you know, without having that kind of inside person, you know, it would have been quite, you know, difficult, you know, to get council to change their position. So Sue was able to put up a motion basically saying that the changes should be rescinded, that, you know, all the parents should be contacted and told that they could still have access to the service. I mean, there was a few other things in there, but that's the basic thrust of it.
That's good.
And by having her able to put that motion up, that then meant that the other councillors, feeling that community pressure, you know, I think realised that they couldn't really, you know, even if maybe they agreed with management, you know, that they couldn't be seen to be, you know, doing this to parents.
That's great. You had the victory, which is, a credit to community mobilisation in taking on this sort of bureaucratic decision.
Yeah, so just briefly with that, on Wednesday night, we presented a petition which we managed to get 421 signatures in
That's
just
good.
A fortnight.
Mm.
And we also had a couple of parents who had just come into the campaign, so that was good. So it wasn't the familiar faces who'd been hassling the council for 3 weeks. We had a couple of new people come in and talk about their experience. And, basically most of the councillors were all sort of really falling over themselves to sort of be the to apologise for this.
Yeah.
And there was also some amendments to the motion that kind of really strengthened it in terms of sort of pointing out that, you know, the NDIS is going to have a really negative effect. So, you know, we'll have to keep monitoring it. For now, we have been told that, you know, the service will be restored for existing and new clients, because that was a concern that we had, was that... anybody, you know, whose life experiences mean that they'd need, you know, changing life experiences mean that they'd need the service, or anybody who, you know, moves new to the area might not be have access.
Mm.
I mean, I think the other good thing was that there is meant to be an internal review about, you know, how this happened. I mean, I'm a little cynical about, you know, exactly what might happen with that, but at least that's going to keep the pressure on management. And, of course, the people who are involved with the campaign, all of us are going to keep a very close watch on what the council management does. I think, you know, the councillors passed this motion unanimously and were very strong on the fact that the service should remain. But, you know, I think we have to keep tabs on
Absolutely.
To make sure that's what happens.
And congratulations. That's a great victory for you guys. And thanks for talking to us about the campaign.
No problem.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ian.
Okay, bye.